This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 435 for September 14th, 2018. It's not all about Ford. Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLine.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific Time. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine in iTunes, Stitcher, or on YouTube.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems. And by BorgWarner, propulsion solutions that support a clean, energy-efficient world.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Or if you're in Australia, as I know that some of our viewers truly are, good morning. So, John is not here today. And for those of you who watched last week and you knew that I brought him on as a special guest, he's not even going to be a special guest this week because I've got three special guests. And this is just going to be a fantastic show. So first of all, Todd Losser from Automobile.
Gary, thank you for having me on.
Thanks for being here. Stephanie Brinley, who just challenged the hurricane to get up here.
Yes.
Today for the show.
That sounds so dramatic.
It was dramatic.
It wasn't even raining. In Atlanta, well, I was just really... See, here's how you beat the hurricane when you're having something like this happen. You take the 6 a.m. flight.
Okay, so...
Get out of town before
that, see, you...
There's an experience.
Above traveling. And beyond. Mm-hmm. And last, but certainly not least, that voice you just heard, Joanne Mueller from Forbes.
Hi, Gary.
Okay.
Glad to be here.
So we're mixing this up a little bit. So, okay, usually we tell you to get the questions in before the show starts. I'm telling you now to get the questions in. So send them through email to viewermail, all one word, at autoline.tv or via the YouTube chat. Now, if you're looking at this on YouTube, I'm told that if you look right there, that is where you'll see the chat area on the screen. Not Todd's head.
But, yeah, so you'll see the questions.
But somewhere over there.
Okay. Bubbles coming out of his head.
Okay.
Talk bubbles. And
contact me right here. I forgot my tin hat.
And there are also social media accounts. You can do it at facebook.com/AutoLineNetwork, all one word, AutoLine Network. Twitter at AutoLine, Instagram at AutoLine Network. Call us at 1-620-288-6546. That's 1-620-AUTOLIN. Leave us a brief message. Do it about 30 seconds, and that way we can get more in the show. So I really urge you to, you know who's here, so you know that you can ask questions about damn near anything, and I'm sure there'll be a profound answer. So, all right, where I want to begin is... Joanne wrote a story in Forbes about Ford, and it was a great story. So everybody should go to Forbes.com and read it.
Thank you.
But, okay, so your story is basically that there's some concern that the rest of the world has outside of Dearborn that things perhaps are not going so well at Ford, and that Ford made a big splash at the auto show saying they're going to be bringing out, like, 500,000... different electric vehicles, and everybody's still wondering what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
And so they had you meet up with Jim Hackett, the CEO of the company. So tell us what you learned.
Sure, yeah. Well, I'd like to start with in the end of July, Ford did a investor call they do at the end of every quarter to review their numbers, and they had... disappointing numbers. More importantly, they said the outlook doesn't look so good, and we are going to have to take a whole bunch of charges and restructure our business. But gosh, we haven't figured out what that is yet. Mm-hmm. So we're going to tell you that we're going to do this, but you just have to wait and find out. And the analysts were really mad. And a lot of people started challenging Jim Hackett, the CEO, right there on the phone. about, you know, what the heck's going on? Do you even have your fingers on this business? I've never been in an earnings call like that before. It was shocking. And so I called up Ford the next day. I said, man, what the heck happened there? And they were like, oh, you know, you need to come in and talk to Jim. He's actually doing a lot behind the scenes. He just isn't ready to share it yet. So I said, okay, I'll take that interview. And then on top of that, Jim Hackett himself requested to meet me in the design studio because he wanted me to see what he's been doing. And the big thing, you know, Jim Hackett has a philosophy that he brought from Steelcase, the furniture company where he used to work, which is that it's called design thinking. And it sounds pretty simple. You know, you just have to get in the mind of the consumer and then you'll design better products. Well, I would hope that the auto industry's already figured that out a long time ago, but apparently not so much, because when he went into the design studio back in the end of 2017 to see what the electric vehicle team was working on, he found this not very nice looking. It was a very vanilla hatchback, silver. It looked a lot like a Ford Focus. It was electric, that's all. And it was okay, but he said, how is this going to help us win? You know, it's not just Tesla we're competing against. Every company is coming out with tons of EVs. I want you to go back to the drawing board, figure out something that people will aspire to. What do we have that people aspire to? And they all said, the Mustang. And so they went back and they designed a crossover, electric crossover, that is inspired by Mustang. I had the privilege of seeing a little sneak peek at it. It's pretty hot.
And it may or may not be called the Mach 1.
Right. So that's what they called it at the auto show when they didn't even have this vehicle yet. They had this splashy video, and that's the video you were, the auto show you were talking about. All they did was, you know, imply that something was coming, and they called it the Mach 1.
So give us the timeline again. The plain vanilla electric car was how long ago?
Well, it had been designed. It was
when you saw it, though.
When
Jim Hackett saw it. I'm sorry.
When Jim Hackett saw it, it would have been
6 weeks.
November of 2017.
So that's pretty good. Obviously, you've seen, and there's been some little backgrounders on this, and some teaser drawings and so on. Mm-hmm. So we've got drawings of the car. Did you see a clay of it?
I did.
You did. Okay.
I did.
So it's gotten that far, but in a fairly short amount of time for a design.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Obviously, by the time it's out.
Explain what the clay is for those who don't know what that is.
Good point. Yes, a clay model is basically a full-sized model made of clay, and you have clay modelers who are very skilled craftspeople who will model this, and they'll make some changes. They can make changes depending on what the designers want, just by adding more clay and then shaping it a different way and kind of finalizing the
product. So it's a giant Play-Doh object that looks exactly like a car.
But it's got a shiny coat on it. They can put a paint type of thing.
Dynoc.
And the point is that the clay it means that the design is further along than just drawings, which is kind of the first step.
Yeah.
And so this came along in a fairly short manner, although I guess all they had to do is crib off their own Mustang and add a couple of extra doors and make it a crossover Mustang or something.
Well, and they also now use a lot more digital modeling that, so that you can get a little bit faster along and get more voices involved in the middle. Yeah. But it's one of the interesting things that's happening now with Ford, though, is the timeline that you've talked about here. They've said, okay, we need to change things and fix things, and we're not quite sure how to do that. And, yeah, the investment community does not like uncertainty.
No.
And I'm going to spend all this money fixing something, but I'm not sure how I'm going to fix it is unsettling. It's unsettling to have the idea that you feel like you know how much it's going to cost when you don't know what you're going to do.
No.
And there's more to it than that on Ford's side when they come up with those numbers. They do have an idea of what that's going to happen. But what they've set themselves up for is this Mustang-inspired EV that we're talking about is not until after 2020, 2021, 2022, in that time frame, we're looking at a few years where the question is, what's coming? What's happening next? We have Bronco and Ranger coming.
And GM has promised, what,
20 by 2023. And GM's one is right. interesting as well, because when you start digging into that, a fair number of those are going to China.
Right.
So U.S., you say that number, we see that number, but it doesn't mean 2023.
But a proliferation of models among, and now we've got the Chevy Bolt, and there'll be a presumably a Buick and a Cadillac, or several Buicks, several Cadillacs.
Okay, to be fair to Ford, it wasn't like a million, as you point out in your story, it's 40 new hybrids or electric vehicles by 2022, which seems rather astonishing. But to the point of these numbers that you're talking about, Stephanie, and so I'm quoting you.
I'm a good source.
Okay, so you point out in October 2017, Hackett announced $14 billion in cost-cutting fitness actions. Okay, he used to be a former University of Michigan offensive lineman.
Yes.
And so he does these fitness actions. 6 months later, he nearly doubled the target to $25.5 billion by 2022. Then in July, Ford said it would spend up to $11 billion to restructure its global business over the next 3 to 5 years without offering any specifics. That's
pretty soon
the problem,
you're talking about real money, right?
Yeah, and I'm glad, I'm so happy you brought that up, because, you know, I've seen these numbers and kind of the mix of Wall Street and car enthusiast questions is, okay, so you're going to restructure and take all these billions and billions of dollars out of cost, which you need to do because Ford stock is languishing below $10 a share, and the Ford family, which has the controlling stock, isn't happy about that. And meanwhile, you also have to give us all this new product, because since the Mulally era, your product has really kind of gone stale, except for the F-Series pickup trucks.
So that brings us to a quote. Mm-hmm. This I think is like the best quote in your piece.
Okay.
Okay, so you quote one Ford executive who'd only speak on background, and this is a quote: "Our business is not healthy right now, not by any stretch of the imagination. We've reverted to being a one-trick pony again," he said, referring to dependence on F-Series profits. "That's been the story of our lives."
This
gets to your point, Todd. It's the F-Series.
And remember, they used to call themselves the leader in sport utility vehicles, too. But you look at how old the Ford Explorer is, and how old and not very good the Ford Escape is, and how uncompetitive.
Even though the EcoSport is new to this market, it's not the most competitive.
Yeah, the EcoSport is also...
And here's what it exposed, and this is the thing that I find most interesting, is that, you know, Ford was held up as this wonderful company for not taking the bailout. The Mulally era, everything was beautiful. They gained market share. Well, one reason was because their competitors were on their back, right? But Mulally did some very good things at Ford. Don't get me wrong. He got the company all rowing in the same direction, this old idea of one Ford. But he made the gamble in a period of rising gas prices that we should put all our money into F-150s that are aluminum. And, you know, he did some small car stuff now, which is all gone, but which is another story. But the point is, he ignored the rest of the lineup. And that's to your point, Todd. So now, on top of that, so you have old products, but what's been fascinating as these savings goals keep ratcheting up is that Ford is uncovering a tremendous amount of waste that we thought was already dealt with.
And then that does seem to be part of the issue. When you talk about, when you talk to Joe Heinrichs and some of the other executives there, they do seem to have some really clear ideas on how to improve production processes. And one of the reasons they need to save all these costs is because, by the way, these electrics and hybrids and all these new fuel powertrains cost money. And it's
cheap.
Big risk. So it's not, and not just Ford, all the other manufacturers are in the same position. You not only have to figure out how to fund the product that you're going to sell tomorrow, you've got to build the nest egg to fund the future product as well. And that, a fundamental part of that is always true, but it's much more diametrically opposed right now. And the EVs and the plug-in hybrids, they're
product
much more
that
you're
risky.
Than we had before. Mm-hmm. And there's less building off of one to another. So it's almost two different paths, and they need every bit of that money.
So maybe you can't answer this question, but we David Glotfelty wants to know, has Ford redesigned from the ground up, or is this another rehash with a radiator, tailpipes, and a body that doesn't make sense for an electric? I'm sure it doesn't have tailpipes.
He's talking about the electric Mustang. Yeah.
That you saw. I don't know
that they haven't shared enough of what they're doing for mm-hmm. me to answer that. I don't know if you've seen more than
well,
I have.
I think it's just pretty clear that, and I'm getting into an embargoed presentation area here, but I think it's pretty clear that this car is not going to be on the same platform as the Mustang, clearly. I mean, the Mustang will remain, for now, the only rear-wheel drive Ford that's not a truck. Mm-hmm. And it will be smaller. I think it will be a smaller car, more compact size.
So like MKC sort of
thing? I'm thinking
probably.
Something like that, and yeah. probably not as tall either. I mean, I think we're probably talking truly crossover size, which would be, what, about 61, 62, 63 inches overall height.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sketch that they have released shows yeah. that it's not that tall.
Right. There's
that sketch that there. Sketch right yeah. there suggests that it's not as tall as a traditional SUV.
And for those of you who are listening to this on Stitcher, it's not as tall.
It's a Mustang 2. It's Mustang styling, latest Mustang styling, which is a really good design. Applied to a completely different model, basically. Mm-hmm.
So Wright Knight 70 has a comment here. He says, Hackett has hacked away too many car models in the Ford brand. They should have at least kept the Fusion. SUV crossovers continue to steal market share, but the sedan is not dead yet.
The sedan is not dead yet. One of the things that Ford is looking at is their particular sedans are not doing well. Partially because they haven't been supported the way they need to have been. Fusion has an update for 2018.
I don't know what that means.
Fusion, all right. Fusion has an update for 2019 model year going on sale soon, but it doesn't look that much different. It's all the same looking vehicle. So you've got a vehicle that's been around for give or take 8 years, and by then you've got people leasing and coming back, and they're like, well, it just looks like the one that I just turned in. And even though the technology is improved and the powertrain's improved and the handling, and they've done work to the car, it's not work that consumers see very easily. And they haven't supported that very well. And I think that Ford still struggles with the volume question. If you look at a Honda or a Toyota, they're much more willing to take a risk on something that's going to be 75 to 125,000 units or maybe even 50,000 units. And you look at Ford, and if it's under 200, their skin starts to crawl. And they're like, I don't know if we can make this work. So there's just some
but
fundamental...
that goes to the cost issue.
It goes
if
to the cost
If they can get
issue.
The cost down, then they can afford to do these sort of shared... architecture underneath, not really a platform either. No. They're calling them modules, but the point is that you can then have many different cars off of just a handful of basic architecture.
Well, were you optimistic when you left there?
I was more optimistic than when I went in, but I think there's an awful lot of work to do there and a lot of uncertainty. And I do think the clock is ticking on him and his method of changing this company. And I just don't know, unless he can get people to follow him really fast, I worry that, the vultures are just going to start.
What does Wall Street think will happen with Ford Motor Company going forward? I mean, you know, they've been talking about how we're not an automaker anymore. We're a mobility yeah. company. And you've got Hackett talking about taking all this cost out while bringing a lot of new product in the next 3 years or so.
Yeah.
What does Wall Street expect that it's not getting?
You know, I think that Wall Street looks at General Motors as being about 3 years ahead of what Ford is now trying to do.
Mostly in electrification?
No, just the idea of restructuring your company to yeah. balance for the core and the future.
Yep.
And GM, I give Mary Barra and Dan Ammann a lot of credit, and Mark Reuss too, but they have figured out, why are we spending money in Europe? Why are we spending money in Russia, Indonesia, Australia? They've exited all these markets,
yeah.
and they have saved that money then is now being poured into developing the Cruise AV that they're going to launch next year as a robo-taxi service. Now, yeah. whether that works out for GM or not, we don't know.
We don't know.
But the point is, Ford is now, it's almost like Ford has read the playbook that GM wrote 3 years ago and said, That's what we got to do.
And they're not, and they're still, the details aren't there yet. I mean, it's not, GM has done those that come out of the certain markets and they've made investments in different spaces. But you can see different activities that the company is doing that's going to lead them down the path. And right now, Ford's activities don't seem to be as aggressive. And, you know, when they talk about, when they talk in the earnings call about needing to exit their underperforming businesses and pay attention to the ones that are doing well, one thing that strikes me as a potential risk is it feels a little bit like guiding yourself through the rear of your mirror. There is conversation about mobility, but they don't seem to have as good of a handle around it. They still are more testing and not really sure what's going to happen, where GM and some others are going to market with some things. But they build a hell of a pickup
and
truck.
If you
define it on your rearview mirror, that's going to be a problem. You're not going to land where you're supposed to land.
Well, remember,
right, so we have a comment here from our friend that we all know and Pulitzer Prize winner, Dan Neal. He says, Ford is inventing the mega niche. What do you make of that?
Inventing the mega niche. Is he talking about the pickup truck then, or what? I guess he's talking about that. I mean, I was about to say that. You go back to 2010 after the GM and Chrysler bankruptcies. And by the way, while Ford didn't take any bailout money, it did. I always have to remind that it took nearly $9 billion in DOE money to turn Michigan Assembly into a Focus / C-Max factory.
With all taxpayer money.
Which will now become a pickup truck factory.
They did pay it all back.
They're still paying it back. They're on schedule, but last time I spoke with them, they were paying on schedule. They've got till at least next year, I think. And but everybody spoke about how, okay, in the new world order of American brand automobiles, GM and Ford and Chrysler no longer can count on the pickup truck to bring all the profits. And GM talked about how, well, the Chevy Cruze was going to be a profitable compact car right out of the box, which is almost unheard of in Detroit in this business, and that we, you know, if pickup trucks remain 11% of the market or even less, and remember, this is when gas prices had also spiked and contributed to this recession and everything, that we're not going to we can't go back to that. We have to have companies that are sustainable by building something other than pickup trucks. And now they're still making all their profits on pickup trucks. In the case of Fiat Chrysler making a handsome profit off of Jeeps, and I think that's probably a better strategy.
And pickup trucks.
Exactly.
All three of the companies are still...
They're all back to that.
All right, so we're going to do... Blah, 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 blah. Okay, we're going to have one comment, we're going to have one phone call, then we're going to move on from Ford.
All right.
Okay? So the comment is from James Welling. You're all missing the big news. They'll be unveiling a new Transit with color-coded bumpers at the Hanover Commercial Vehicle Show. That's pretty good. Okay, so we have a phone call. So could you please bring the phone call in, Katie?
This is Clem Zarovsky in Delmont, Pennsylvania. My question is, with Ford on shaky ground, it seems like, are they going to be able to continue auto racing like a NASCAR and the Ford GT program? I'm sure NASCAR is getting a little nervous about possibly losing Ford.
My parents owned an old Delmont, by the way. Throw that in.
So what do you think?
Delmont, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
The relative costs of NASCAR are not that high. At least it's not Formula One. Otherwise, they would have to
pull out. But what about Ford GT?
They've got the cars built, and they continue the program until the GT is no longer competitive because they've changed the rules and someone else has come along with something else. Will Ford do a follow-up to the GT?
We'll see.
I'm not sure about
they've
that.
They've taken breaks in between before doing follow-ups for that. Yeah. And the relative cost of those programs to what they're really trying to do isn't where the issues are. And I think that it's probably important to say, too, that while Ford is experiencing difficulties at the moment, I wouldn't put them say that they're at risk of not surviving or at risk of not going through that. These companies have been around for 100 years. The auto industry is cyclical. It changes. We change our mind on what we want to buy and what we want to drive. And there's ups and downs. And I do think that there's still the ability for the company to return and be profitable.
It all seems to be Wall Street's reaction, though, and whether Ford can continue to deliver dividends, and that's very important to the Ford family.
It certainly is a concern for everybody, and that maintains part of the conversation. But shaky doesn't, to me, mean that they're in danger of failing,
no.
I don't think.
No.
All right,
no.
Donald Ford. Stephanie. Yeah.
Done with Ford.
IHS Market, or IHS, I said it right.
You did. There's only one I.
Make it his and my spell correct.
I know, me too. I hate that.
So, okay. So you track the numbers. You look at what's going on in terms of the industry.
We do, yes.
Okay. So this year so far, how would you characterize it?
This year is about where we expected it to be. And we've adjusted, we've tweaked our full year forecast slightly, but we're still about 17 million. You know, we have consumers who are pretty confident, but cars are also getting a little bit more expensive. We had we had 7 years of growth before last year contracting. And this is a stable, mature market. Mm-hmm. There's just not a lot of growth right now to be had. Which means that automakers are fighting for share a little bit differently in order to get the volume they want. But the incentives story has been kind of interesting this year. So incentives have gone up in different areas, and some automakers use them more and less than others. But over the last 7 or 8 months, incentives on passenger cars are coming down, and incentives on trucks and SUVs are coming up. And what we're seeing is automakers in general, been pretty smart with incentives. We haven't returned to 2009 to 2007 where you just incentivized everything to make it move and keep production up. So passenger car production has come down, so you don't need to incentivize them as much because you don't have that many that are sitting around. And trucks and SUVs have gotten much more competitive. There's far more entries to be had, so incentives are moving people a little bit.
So is some of the growth that we're seeing in terms of crossovers and pickups just almost, dare I say, artificial growth, meaning that people are getting really great lease deals or really great...
No, I think there's a genuine interest in there. I think that this particularly, pickup trucks go 11% to 14% of the market. There's economics and there's housing starts and all these things that play into where pickup trucks fall in that space. But really the recession when people kind of stepped away from, or felt like people were stepping away from utilities, that was a blip. American consumers have been going towards utility vehicles for a good 30 years.
Well,
and they've gotten better, and we've changed what an SUV is has changed. All these tall hatchbacks that give good fuel economy, give you the utility, give consumers what they want. I really do think that the trend toward utility vehicles is genuinely consumer-driven. Automakers are giving them the products that they want. I don't think it means sedans are dead forever. But it is a real trend, and I think that the recession time period, when it pulled back, that was the blip. Mm-hmm.
But there is more profit in, a mid-size SUV versus a mid-size sedan, so you're going to see...
Now there is.
Okay, so the public wants them, but a lot of that's driven by the kind of advertising.
Oh, it's helpful. Well, if you're looking at a 30-year time period, we recognize advertising, but I don't really believe we're quite that stupid. We don't just buy it because it's up there.
No.
The other thing is, as these SUVs get and crossovers get much more plentiful, and as sedan makes come back down and you aren't building as many, that assumed profit, higher profit on those vehicles is either going to erode or the watermark comes up and the expectation changes.
Sure.
So it's not going to be the assumption that forever you're going to be able to do this. The incentive's coming up.
What do you make of you talk about the pickup truck market being 11 to 14% generally, and we're up around 14 now. It was 11% back in 2010 or so. What do you make of all these high ATPs on pickup trucks, though? The $40,000,
$50,000 transaction price.
Average transaction price, yes.
Wow.
$50,000.
And they go up to almost $90,000.
Oh, sure, easily, yeah. And I'm just talking about the average. A lot of very fancy, well-equipped pickup trucks.
You see it in all segments, really. Mm-hmm. Average transaction pricing is going up and up and up.
Right.
People right now feel confident, and they're willing to spend the money, and they want stuff.
And
people want stuff, and they want technology.
These lengthy,
there's enough of them willing to spend that. And again, they're hugely profitable, so it doesn't need to be 20% of Ford F-150s don't need to be in that space. It might be a smaller
portion. And the biggest incentives, obviously, on those pickup trucks, always often a low five-figure number.
Right.
All right, we're going to take a break here. We're going to hear from our friends from BorgWarner, and we'll be back in a minute.
The world is changing at an ever-increasing pace. No matter what the mode of transportation, there is always the need for an efficient propulsion system. And that's exactly what BorgWarner has been doing since the earliest days of the automotive industry. We create innovative mobility technologies that reduce energy consumption and emissions while improving performance. Our proven track record has made us an industry leader in forward-looking propulsion solutions for combustion, hybrid, and electric vehicles.
Okay, since those of us here at AutoLine are very contemporaneous, we want to make sure that you're following us on social media. So, Facebook.com/AutoLine.network, Twitter at AutoLine, Instagram at AutoLine Network. Okay, so remember, you got AutoLine for Twitter, AutoLine Network for Instagram and Facebook. There is a viewer mail section on AutoLine.tv. And you can go on there and you can see John, who is answering questions that you send in questions. John answers those questions. So there's a lot of great info there. So check that out. That's at autoline.tv. All right. So we have some questions here, and we're going to go through these questions, and then we'll get on to other topics. Okay. So Lost in the Kerf says, is big oil influencing with dollars traditional automakers to keep making internal combustion engine vehicles and the slow the electric vehicle battery/technology? Joanne.
I would say quite the opposite, actually. I don't want to talk about big oil, but I think that the car makers are actually pouring a ton of money into electrics because the government regulations are requiring them to come up with these zero emission vehicles, and they're having a hard time figuring out how to get there. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, Trump just changed the midterm standards, but the world is moving forward anyway. So these guys are selling global vehicles. They need this technology. I say electrics are coming whether consumers want them or not. And I think that's going to be what we may see a lot of incentives on 5 years from now.
They do.
Yeah. Well, you're right. We do now. Yeah.
You know, the Fiat 500e was going for, you know, the price of taking a family of five to In-N-Out Burger. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, there were some crazy deals on that, on California vehicles in that space. And no, I would agree with you. No, it's not.
I think oil companies are, I think there's been a long, for many years, kind of a clash between auto companies and oil companies. I have a high-level GM exec long gone told me circa 2005 or 6 how They had long separated their interests. That auto companies knew that they would have to move to a cleaner, higher fuel efficiency vehicles, and of course, oil companies would love for all of us to be driving, heavy duty pickup trucks that get a low double digit fuel economy. The question is, what's going to happen politically?
So might one not say that, gee, if they make, as you put in your story about Ford, I'm not going to mention Ford again, $10,000 on average that Ford makes per F-150, mm-hmm. And big oil makes more money from pumping an F-150 full of fuel than a Fiesta.
Right. Right.
Wouldn't they both sort of like mutually beneficial?
Well, yeah, they're both mutually beneficial, but in the long run, but the F-150 or let's say Chevy Silverado, since we want to get away from Ford, and Ram pickup truck is getting much better fuel efficiency now, and as a result of the 2025 CAFE standard, which is under threat of the current administration. Way better fuel economy now than it got 10 years ago and certainly more than 20 years ago. And we'll get better fuel efficiency if those 2025 standards stick into place and we're driving, you know, four-cylinder Chevy Silverados and EcoBoost F-150s and so on and 48-volt Rams. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, yes, they're both, they both mutually benefit from, from selling more of the big trucks, but in the end, if if this plays out the way that the pro-electricity side wants to play out, I see oil companies kind of going the way of coal companies. It'll be an even more political.
They're coming back.
They're coming back. Well, I'm not saying they're going away because coal companies are still around, and they'll have to use more and more political clout to make sure that they sell their product. And they got too.
So I got four product questions here. So no more politics, no more environment for now.
Okay.
All right. Ray Mitrowitz wants to know, what do you think about the mid-engine Corvette that's on the way? And what about the recent rumor of a Corvette-based crossover? Works for the Mustang.
Does it?
Stephanie, mid-engine Corvette, what do you think?
Oh, we're looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of kind of pushing the format that they have as far as they really can and moving that around. They'll be able to have better handling and more power than they can out of the current platform. Corvette, though, still needs to find a way to really connect with a more useful buyer. That's been a consistent problem for Corvette.
I did have a Corvette guy once tell me that attending a Corvette club meeting is like going to an AARP meeting.
Really? Wow.
I've been to a few. They're interesting.
What's the average age? Anyone know?
I forgot.
It just
now
keeps
what
going
it was,
up, and I think that
it does.
I was initially, 10 some years ago, when the rumors were starting to pop up about a mid-engine Corvette being the replacement, I was kind of against it, thinking, well, that'd be like doing a mid-engine Porsche 911. But in the end, really, a mid-engine Porsche 911 is a better car. It's the Cayman. And to Stephanie's point, they need a younger buyer. They need to refresh their buyer, so to speak. They need to get the grandsons and granddaughters of their
right.
current
So what about a crossover? Joanne, you think there's any possibility of that?
I don't know. I think that's much better for Todd.
I think that would be folly. I think that's a crazy rumor, and maybe
that does
if
like
they
a
put
crazy
a,
rumor.
I mean, how would you do it?
What would it look like?
A mid-engine crossover like wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah. Right?
Well, maybe they just take the old one, and then just.
Yeah, that
jack
that
it up.
Works.
All right. Bill Ventimiglia.
I know.
Sorry about, do you know him? Did
it's
I say
the same
name?
Bill.
Did I say
Hi, Bill.
Name, did I say his name right?
Yeah.
Sort of.
Close enough.
All right. What do you think of the new Chevy Blazer coming in 2019, and what do you think it will cost?
Ooh.
It'll be price competitive because
what is that?
They're
Has
good
to
at
be.
That. So probably 25, 28 to 40, 45.
30, really.
28, 30, up to 45, maybe 50. Right now, when we're looking at a lot of the crossovers and sedans and anything that's kind of in that 28 to 30, start up to 35, the price walk from the bottom to the top is $15,000 to $20,000 on almost every vehicle right now.
So yeah. basically, you would start at 30 and you get to 45.
You get to 45
yeah.
or 50.
Yeah. The Ford Edge ST is now in the low 40s. And you have to remember that this is not, even though they bring back the Blazer name, it's not
yes.
going to be a competitor for the Ford Bronco, which is an
right.
old-fashioned body-on-frame sport utility vehicle. This fills the spot between the Blazer, the Equinox and the Traverse that where Chevy doesn't have a competitor for the Ford Edge. And this is a very kind of profitable segment for them because Ford's found that you get older empty nesters buying the two-row mid-sized SUVs like the Edge instead of going to, say, a two-row Escape or sticking with a three-row Explorer. So a lot of those go out of the showroom pretty well equipped.
Well contented. Yeah.
And so I think that's what the Chevy Blazer is going to be.
Okay.
Right.
Matt the Viewer says, Subaru killed their Forester XT for 2019. A bad move?
I'm trying to remember what the XT was.
No.
Was that the turbo?
Clearly not a bad move
not
because
that
no
bad.
One can remember it. Okay. And Ray Mitrowitz, I get a second time to screw up his name. Thoughts on the new Mercedes GLE, which they just showed?
The GLE looks interesting. The electric that they introduced or revealed last week.
That was the EQC.
The EQC was more disturbing. disturbing.
So this is. Why is it disturbing?
That'd be great for a testimonial on an ad.
Yeah. Less disturbing.
The GLE does. The front takes a quite a bit of a different look, but when you look at the back, you can still see some old M class in there. That vehicle on the outside seems to go where you would expect it to go. Mm-hmm. But they're doing some clever things in the interior too, which is going to be part of what makes that a little bit more special.
Well, if you look at the side surfacing, the kind of the body, take your mind off the over cladding on the wheels and the grill. It looks to me more car-like than the current model, and it looks more like a tall station wagon, which is, I think, where we're really everybody's heading with the crossovers and sport utilities. And then you have to add that overcladding, the dark brown, I think that is, over the wheels, and then the more bold truck-like grill, just to bring it back to being an SUV again. Mm-hmm. So that's
a really big face.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to take another break. We're going to come back, and we're going to have these minds at work with the question from Dr. Data. Mm-hmm. So we're going to hear from Lear in Bridgestone.
Lear Kinexis offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts, all delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
So one of the things that occurs to me is that this is such a great show, and we get to see you folks, but not everybody gets to watch. So you can see After Hours, listen to After Hours on the Apple podcast app, mm-hmm. Stitcher, or go to Autoline.tv and listen to it on your phone. But I want people to see you guys, so they should just watch the show. So anyway, so it's time for a question. So I was going to ask a question that was related to the hurricane.
This is Dr. Data in the house.
Yes, he is, certainly.
Okay.
But as I told you guys, multiple choice. So please bring up the question, okay? Who will produce 10.7 million barrels of crude per day in 2018, and who will produce 11.5 million barrels of crude per day in 2019? So 10.7 million barrels per day this, and now it's going to be multiple choice. So bring up our options, the United States, Saudi Arabia, or Russia. So we have two questions here.
And it's the same country.
2018 and 2017.
19.
So I put them both together to 2019. Sorry.
Yeah.
So I put them both together just to make it simpler in terms of number of slides.
The same answer for both?
So it's not the same answer for both, is what you're saying.
No. I'm saying that I wanted to consolidate, so that's why there are. Okay, so it's just. So, okay. Which country do you think, Joanne, will produce the crude number 10.7 in 2018?
For 2018. United States.
Steph? That would be my guess as well. That would be my guess as well.
Todd?
I'm going to say Russia, to be different.
Okay. Now the same thing. So 11.5 million barrels of crude per day in 2019. So what do you think? Joanne?
I'm going to stick with the U.S.
Yeah, I think I have more investment here right now. Yeah.
I'm going to go with U.S. on this one.
So basically, Stephanie and Joanne are the big winners. Todd, you're only half a winner. The United States.
All right.
I mean, and then that's according to the Energy Information Agency. So that is pretty astonishing.
All coming out of the fracking, right?
Apparently.
For the most part.
Apparently. Yeah. So I guess that's good news. Although while I was driving around today, I saw that gasoline prices are going way up, and because of the hurricane, I guess.
Yeah,
all right. So Todd, you're the automobile German correspondent, just wrote a big story about what's going on in the VW group at the upper end of things with the Porsche and Lamborghini and Bentley,
and Armand Yorke-Hocker.
So, I mean, there were some very astonishing things in this story, which I'm sure people can see at
automobilemag.com.
And so one of the things that really struck me was that we were talking about the $10,000 that Ford earns from an F-150. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Bentley loses $20,000 per car.
I know, this kind
of
crazy.
What kind of a business is that?
Continental and Mulsanne, was it, or just the Continental?
No, he just every vehicle
and
sold.
And they charge the average. I mean, there's a range, but let's call it a $300,000 vehicle. How do you lose $20,000 on a $300,000?
Yeah, usually luxury cars have huge margins, and especially when you the Bentleys share a lot of components mm-hmm. with other VW Group luxury brands like Audi and Lamborghini for that mm-hmm. matter, and Porsche.
So basically, it doesn't sound all like sweetness and light over there right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, half the guys in the C office are facing charges, if not jail time or prison time.
Dieselgate.
Well, but you're still seeing the effects of Dieselgate. You're still seeing Volkswagen as a brand struggle in the U.S. You see, Audi has every time they issue sales numbers in the U.S., they say this month is better than last month, and this month is better than it's ever been for this month in the year. Their numbers are going up and up and up, but they started with such a small number versus, say, Lexus and Mercedes-Benz and the leaders in the luxury brands, and they're starting to inch up into the top five among luxury brands. VW is... remember when it passed General Motors as the number one automaker, I think 2009 or 10, mm-hmm. and then Toyota passed Volkswagen for a period, and I know that VW and Toyota are kind of neck and neck these days. And again, I'm talking about the VW Group, which includes right. all these brands. And I remember that the word was that Toyota was scared to be in the number one position. And I never heard that about VW. And the reason is that look who was in the number one position for so long. It was GM. Mm-hmm. And look what happened to them, especially in 2010. And, just managing all those brands right. A little bit of hubris battling BMW for ownership of Rolls-Royce and Bentley. Mm-hmm. And they ended up with Bentley. Yeah. And how's that going for them? Well, there's lots of costs involved, clearly.
It's never really made a lot of sense to me how many brands VW has. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can go brand by brand and find strengths and find where they're doing okay and they're right for their market. But still, they're 12 or 13? If you think of Moya,
yeah.
maybe that's 14.
Yeah, Ducati and so on. Yeah,
yeah it's an astounding number of brands.
So one last little point on that. VW and Ford are working together. They have a lot of common things, common problems right now.
Yeah.
And so they've decided, I think right now it's commercial trucks, but I would not be surprised to see the two of those companies work together more.
Perhaps Volkswagen?
Keep in mind, Volkswagen's willing to work with people.
Yeah.
Before too, and Volkswagen's perfectly happy to buy a vehicle that somebody else has put together.
VW and Ford worked together on European minivans 20 years ago, right?
So for VW, it's much more common to work with somebody else than it is for Ford. This one does feel like it's more in the commercial van space.
Yeah.
You look at corporate culture, though. So the big difference here, and we're talking about how many brands VW Group has. Ford has always done best, or it's always gotten back to its roots, which is basically one brand, Ford, plus it's got Lincoln, and nearly jettisoned that. And probably is happy it didn't now because, other than big pickup trucks, premium and luxury brands are where you get bigger margins. But so you have these
unless
two
work. Unless you're Bentley.
Yeah, unless you're Bentley. Well, yeah, apparently. And by the way, so Cocker's story said basically that that Bentley and all those other brands, including Bugatti and Lamborghini and so on, will fold under the Porsche banner, whereas now they're part of the Audi portion of VW Group. But you have
these two very different kinds of companies looking to work together in Europe in the near future. But the one common thread is that you have the Ford family still has control of Ford Motor Company, and VW, what is it, the Lower Saxony, the state of Lower Saxony, owns a big portion of VW Group and has done a lot to
which
kind
is
of
like
profit
a family,
up, which is like a family. Yeah, exactly. So maybe that's the common thread, and maybe that's where that worked out very well for VW 20 years ago when it was putting in expensive interiors in cheap Volkswagens and stunning everybody with how good the interiors were. But maybe that's starting to bite them now.
All right, so let me ask you this, and then we'll go on to another subject. It says in the story, quote, from Wolfsburg's vantage point, Audi is a potential future casualty?
Oh. Very, very, again, very surprising here and to a certain extent in Europe because the A4 is one of the few premium cars that is sometimes a top 10 seller in Europe. But the A4, I believe, has been floundering a little bit lately.
It's a sedan.
Yeah, well, not only that, but I mean from other competition, including the BMW 3 Series in Europe. Again, we think of it as a big success in the U.S., but it's only come up from a very small number to being barely in the top five.
And Audi for USA is good. They're going to hit a month where they aren't able to say it's better than last month. And even though they've still are at 76 or 85, I can't remember what it is right now. Yeah. I think it's about 85.
Months running.
Yeah. A couple of the months in the last year or so have been less than 1% gains. And Subaru's in this a similar position as well.
Yeah.
As the U.S. market flattens out and settles down, and there's going to be a month when these guys are just not going to have.
Well, speaking of German car companies, this in we're mentioning Porsche here, and this sort of surprises me. That so Porsche announced that they're going to be piloting something called Host, whereby if someone owns a Porsche and they list it with this company called Turo, that someone can rent that person's car for a day or a month or some other specified.
Yep.
Okay. Why is this good for Porsche?
Well,
no one wants to answer.
I mean, so, you know, what you're getting is more exposure of your brand to people who don't own your car today.
Right.
And maybe they'll say, wow, that was such a great experience. I want to go out and buy a Porsche.
And the other half of it is if we look at mobility and the assumption that we're going to change how we own vehicles, you still want to make sure that people aspire to them and have that access. And the other thing is we don't know where this is going.
There's
a lot of ideas of how mobility is going to play out. Airbnb for cars, kind of, I'm not Airbnbing my car out.
Right.
Yeah. No. Well, and one other point.
And that's what Turo is effectively. Yeah. And Turo as a company has much more than just Porsche.
Airbnb for Volkswagens is one thing, but if you have it for Porsches, you've got people who always wanted a Porsche saying, well, I don't really want to have someone else drive it, but if I can have someone else drive it and get some of my money back, then maybe I can finally afford that Macan or Boxster or whatever.
That's very much Turo's business model,
right.
Is that they argue that you, consumer, can afford that car. You can stretch and get the car you really want by just renting it out about 7 days a month.
Right. Okay. So to go to the Airbnb analogy, though, okay, this means that if I'm Hyatt Corp, I'm not building as many hotels because everyone's staying in an Airbnb, right? So I'm not going to get that revenue. So if I'm Porsche, why would I
because
facilitate if somebody from not buying my car? I want them to buy my car.
Because we don't really know how this change is going to come together. And there's a higher risk not being part of the conversation than there is of losing some sales on there. And I think that the story that I read on the Porsche Host was like, it would end up costing like $2,700 or $3,000 to buy Turo, rent a 911 for a month. So, like, that's an amount of money that somebody's not actually going to do. It's really very much designed for a couple of hours here and there.
I'd hate to work out the insurance on that
right.
for anything.
I do find it interesting to see that in the really high-end things. Not so much that I find it unrealistic that somebody wouldn't think, I want to go rent a Porsche and drive it up the Malibu Canyon for a day and then give it back to someone for a couple hours and give it back. But, you know, you've got a 911 turbo and you really want to share it?
Well, but
you're knocking some of the cost off.
But don't some rental companies have Porsches and Lamborghinis and Ferraris?
And well, and in the end, it's, all the volume, and by the way, their numbers are way up in the U.S. as well, U.S. Mm-hmm. sales, and mostly because they've added a couple of sport utilities. And so probably there's going to be way more Cayennes and Macans being Airbnb'd out. Mm-hmm. And It may be that they're looking at their production capacity and saying, well, because of all these increases and because we can, with a little bit of a sheet metal change, turn a Porsche Cayenne into an Audi, mm-hmm. You know, maybe we don't want to be selling much more.
Okay. And their participation with Toro is very low risk for Porsche.
Yeah.
I mean, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Yeah. It's not their platform.
Yeah.
They're not. They're investing a little bit into making
just
sure that they're.
A couple of cities, what, LA and.
Yeah, it's two cities right now, yeah. and we're that mobility stuff. It's going to take a while for those business models to settle down and figure out what's going to work in what cities. This is still very much Wild West on that front.
Okay, final topic. I wasn't going to talk about Ford anymore, but I guess I am. Mustang versus Camaro. Todd, you heard something about this.
Yeah, Automotive News ran a piece. They spoke with Al Oppenheimer, who's in charge of the Camaro over at Chevrolet at General Motors. And he said, you know, said basically the Ford Mustang is eating our lunch. And he attributed a lot of this to the fact that all the most desirable Camaros are more high-performance V8 models that have higher sticker prices than some of the Mustangs you can get with an EcoBoost for around $30,000 or so sticker price. If you look at the sales numbers, in some months the Dodge Challenger, which is pretty long in the tooth, has outsold Camaro. And I think for year-to-date they're pretty close in numbers, and the Mustang sales are quite a bit higher. And then Ford also touts how many Mustangs it's selling in Europe now. I think it comes down to a number of things. First of all, we don't know. Ford doesn't break out fleet versus retail. And, the last time I drove one of our Four Seasons test cars, Mazda Miata, through parts of Northern California a couple of years ago during the summer, and what's the Yosemite, and I drove through there, and there were nothing but Mustang convertible rentals with their tops up. I was the only car with the top down, so they sell a number of those. We don't know exactly how many.
All right, so I did check on some of this stuff because I knew that you'd be talking about this.
And, yep.
So because General Motors now is reporting its numbers only quarterly, so the numbers for the first half of 2018 that they sold 25,380 Camaros, which is down 30.6%. Ford sold 42,428 Mustangs, which is only down 4.9%. So if you've dropped, you know, nearly 31%, I think it's got something to do with maybe your product and not necessarily the fact that there are cheap Mustangs you can buy. Then I looked at the number for the rentals. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, again, it's as you say, nobody breaks this stuff down. You guys, IHS Market probably has this to the decimal point and out eight places.
Yeah.
But so Ford rentals overall, so this is Ford in the United States last year, their rental sales were 11.1%, and General Motors were 10%. Mm-hmm. So if we just sort of extrapolate that across all vehicles, then we can just say, they're about the same.
Camaro's slightly older than Mustang is at this point, and these are cars that tend to do that up and down thing, very faddish.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If you think too about Camaro still has visibility issues. Like, it's a great car to look at.
It's a really high belt line, and so it's like you're looking at.
You can't see out of it very well.
You need the rearview camera to back up.
And the Mustang doesn't have those issues, and that's been consistent between Mustang and Camaro forever. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, the Mustang sometimes ends up being the more usable car between the two when you're looking at an EcoBoost base model car. And that, I think, could be one of the reasons that, Camaro and Mustang are fighting.
So ergonomics have a big thing to play.
Especially the latest Mustang, which came out in 2015. The Camaro was, 2016 model. But, so here's the thing. The current Mustang, very handsome design car compared with the last one, you can tell the difference. They look a lot different. To the average person who might be driving Toyota Corollas all his or her life and says, I want something cool this time. You look at this new Camaro, and it doesn't look that much different than the old Camaro. I've written about rumors that the new Camaro was going to crib off of the 1970-and-a-half Camaro, whereas the old one was like a 67 to 69 design language. And they should have done that. They should have done a radical redesign.
That could have made a difference.
The second return Camaro.
I still feel like there's something about that usability. It can have it can make a difference.
But people buy them for the way they look and
they
for the way you can see out of them.
Okay. Final word goes to Joanne because we said we were going to wrap up at 4 o'clock and
did we?
Yeah. And this is just all right. So I promised I wasn't going to talk about Ford again, but I got to ask you.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So here we are talking about Mustang, and you saw this vehicle that is Mustang inspired. Mm-hmm. During your time that you spent over in Dearborn, did anybody say anything about the Mustang? Just the Mustang, not the future cars or.
They love their Mustang. It's one of the the executives there would tell you that the F-150 and the Mustang are carrying the day. I don't think financially that's the case, but it certainly is an important image car for the company. Mm-hmm. So that's not going anywhere.
And that'll be the car that'll just be the only car they have, right?
There's the Fusion, I think, is going to be some sort of crossovery wagon-y thing.
No, that was going to be the Focus, but that was
The Focus
China.
I thought the Fusion was going to survive in a strange new body.
The name will survive.
The name.
It'll look a little bit different. And that's one of the where Ford has kind of created a little bit of problem for themselves when they said, we're going to go away from this, but they haven't backfilled really what that explanation is. Because when they say, we're going to have it's going to still be a Fusion, it's just going to be taller, then everybody says, well, that's a wagon, and we have those.
Yeah.
It's not groundbreaking modern silhouette, which they keep saying they're going to have. We're really in a position where Ford has raised a lot of questions.
And no answers.
And no answers. Mm-hmm. And they're working on them, but it makes everybody nervous.
Yeah.
All right. Stephanie, last word. So you had the last word.
I had the last word.
So, Stephanie,
thank you for letting me join you again.
Stephanie Brinley, IHS Market.
Yes.
Thank you very much for being here. Todd Lassa, automobilemag.com.
Just
go buy the damn magazine.
You can do that too.
You know what I mean?
They still
make those magazines.
Wow.
And,
but there is a lot of stuff on the website.
There's nothing like the magazine.
You get some nice features.
The pictures look great.
Pictures.
Good photography.
Yeah.
And Joanne Mueller of Forbes, thank you for joining us today. And,
thanks, yeah.
And it was a great story. And I'm not just saying that because you're sitting there.
I mean, okay. Thanks.
No, I mean, it was very, and I recommend it.
Anytime a car maker will pull back the curtain a little so you can see and understand their strategy, I love that. Mm-hmm. That's when you get a good story. So thank you.
Story.
All right. So thanks for joining us. John will be back next week. And our special guest, and this is always a popular guest, Bob Lutz will be here in the studio. So join us then, 3 p.m. live next Thursday afternoon. Thanks for watching.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires. Your journey, our passion. Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems, and by BorgWarner, propulsion solutions that support a clean, energy-efficient world.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons, get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.